The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
If you hear an eerie sound coming across Dallas, that's me screaming at night, wanting to get in a position to get a Super Bowl.
Sometimes the moment does get a little too big for people.
Tom Brady lights up in these opportunities.
We got some players on our team where the moment's not too big.
Do you believe in miracles?
Everything that you do is for these times, for these moments, and for these games, and it's going to be a war, and we're exactly up for that.
Welcome to NFL Live, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Tonight's going to be special. Tom Brady and the Bucs versus Dak Prescott and the Cowboys with their season on the line. A grand finale to Super Wild Card Weekend, layered with drama and intrigue. About 5 hours away, is this the GOAT's last run? Can the Cowboys overcome their postseason woes and win tonight as the pressure mounts? Mina, what has you most excited?
I am so excited for the return of Bucs offensive lineman Ryan Jensen. You guys remember he got hurt during training camp. We're talking about one of the best centers in the NFL. He's so nasty. He's the identity of the offensive line. Now, we don't know what he's going to look like coming back from injury or even if he's going to play center. But if he can just buy Brady a tick longer in the pocket, they can punish that Dallas secondary.
I love that, MK. Listen, this is a Mike Evans football game. Mike Evans is a future Hall of Famer. The Tampa Bay Buccaneer wide receiver, week 17, finally got that connection back going with Tom Brady. This Dallas secondary, when you throw the ball outside towards their corners, since the bye week, they give up 9 yards per attempt. This has got to be a game of slants. This has got to be a game of stop routes, and it's got to be a game of go routes. If Tampa Bay is going to win at home, it's going to be because Mike Evans dominates this Dallas back end.
Yeah, that's why Mina is my spirit animal, because we stick to the trenches together. I'm going the big fella Vita Vea in the interior of this line of scrimmage for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
He said
we talked about how much Tom Brady struggles with interior pressure. Well, we know Dak turning the football over. This offensive line has not blocked well in the passing game for the Dallas Cowboys. If the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense is going to make some hay, I think the big fella going to have a lot to do with it.
Hey, we're at Bucks Beach for the next 2 hours in the shadow of Raymond James Stadium, although not many shadows out here right this
second.
Thank
God.
It's sunny and beautiful.
Hey, bro.
We just saw Mina Kimes, Marcus Spears, Dan Orlovsky, Adam Schefter joins us. Well, we got a great crowd out here, too.
What up, people?
Cowboys fans.
What up, people?
Ready for this game or what? They know what this means.
So many Cowboy fans.
I think there are going to be more as they get. A lot of them like Swagoo.
Well,
we travel well.
We travel well. We do things the right way. Okay? We've got beautiful
colors.
You
just don't.
All of those things, you know?
Were you about to say
win?
Okay.
Wow.
Anyway, so we're off to a hot start. Let's go ahead and get Domino's pregame headquarters where we welcome in Ed Werder ahead of this game. Ed, what do we know now, just less than 5 hours away from kickoff?
I wish you'd quit saying 5 hours from kickoff. Cowboys coach Mike McCarthy says he has zero concerns about Dak Prescott, which seems a rather remarkable statement. The Cowboys quarterback threw a career-high 15 interceptions despite missing 5 starts, has a career-long 7-game interception streak, and has 3 pick-sixes in his last 4 games. Each of those has encouraged defeat and inspired doubt about a Cowboys team that has proven it just can't be trusted. McCarthy's first objective tonight is to create immediate rhythm and success for Prescott against a defense he describes as not providing much free offense. It must be earned. I asked receiver CeeDee Lamb about Prescott's confidence, and he said, quote, "We believe in him as a team and his ability to lead us where we want to go, and that's Arizona." You know, the Bucs focused their coverage on Lamb in week one, held him to 2 receptions on 11 targets for a season-low 29 yards. Prescott now has better secondary options with Michael Gallup healthy and veteran T.Y. Hilton playing more snaps every week. And Laura, Prescott says he trusts the defense to handle Tom Brady, and that starts with second-year pass rusher Micah Parsons being used again as both an edge rusher and an off-the-ball linebacker. Dan Quinn wants to create some disguise, force Brady to hold onto the ball just one more second for that Dallas pass rush to create problems.
We love to hear it. Ed, so here you go. No more 5 hours. Now it's 4 hours and 55 minutes.
So much better. So much better.
Ed's ready to kick this thing off. Thanks so much to Ed Werder. Okay, so you heard what Ed just mentioned there, Swagoo. It's got your legs all dancing about Micah Parsons. How should they be using him tonight?
At the line of scrimmage. Letting him get after Tom Brady. That's what I'm talking about. Listen, Micah Parsons in this game, the first week of the season, I thought was too much of an off-the-ball linebacker. And obviously, you want to use him to create some protection issues. But he does his best work at the line of scrimmage. You see here, these were two big sacks in this game after turnovers where you bump him up to the edge rusher. He can go inside or outside, take that move, even though they need to communicate that better. But it's about how fast he can win in this rush. We know Tom Brady loves to get rid of the football, 2.4 seconds on average. Micah Parsons can get to the quarterback in that time. So I think you got to have him hovering around that line of scrimmage more than sitting off and letting him try to diagnose everything. Make this game simple for him. Let his athletic ability take over in this football game. And we know the best chance to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is to affect Tom Brady.
Yeah, we're on Bucs Cowboys for the rest of these 2 hours. And, of course, the coverage continues right up until kickoff right here on ESPN ABC, the ESPN and ABC family of networks. But let's get back to some of Super Wild Card Weekend that was crazy. We go to the Bengals and the Ravens. Got to get y'all's take on this. No Lamar Jackson for the Ravens. So Tyler Huntley gets the start for them. We go to the fourth quarter. The Ravens are with the ball. This game is tied. Huntley running down the left sideline, eventually pushed out of bounds.
This is a great tackle by secondary Bates for Cincinnati. I mean, he might score if not. And then obviously the quarterback sneak. He tries to go over the top, punched out, and Hubbard's going 98 yards the other way.
Yeah, what a play by Sam Hubbard.
Look how fast we are.
You do wonder, yeah, the big men aren't fast. You do
big man
wonder
balling
about that call at the one-yard line. We'll continue to talk about that as the
punch.
Bengals able to take a 24-17 lead. Yeah,
of
right.
course the Bengals defense is ready for it.
Well, they always are. They're pros. 2 minutes left in the game. Fourth and inches, and Huntley able to rush ahead to keep the drive alive. The Ravens still trail by 7. We're going to pick it up with 8 seconds left in the game. Final chance for the Ravens. Fourth and 20 on this one. So Huntley drops it back, heaving it to the end zone. The ball is deflected, but unable to catch deflection there.
So
the Hail Mary falls
short.
Look at this.
Watch Prochet on the left side.
Fingertips.
Oh, my gosh.
His fingertips.
It was close, but no cigar. So that means they advance, the Bengals do, to face the Bills in the divisional round. Plenty to talk about there. Let's start, though, with that Bengals O-line, Dan. What issues did you have with them last night?
Well, the butterfly effect that it has on the quarterback. 3 out of those 5 starters are out. And I think once you see Jonah Williams go out, you watch Joe. There's a difference between playing fast and playing cautious. And we've praised Joe Burrow this year because he's taking what the defense is giving him. Like, make sure the ball gets out when they're taking or they're giving you those completions. But when Baltimore started to not only give you those short completions, but also shrink down on the coverage, you're like, he's starting to play a little cautious rather than being completion driven, quote unquote. And that's my concern coming off of last night is you're taking what the superpower of Joe Burrow is pre-snap figuring out where's the matchup, where's the weakness of the defense, and exploiting it to thinking, I can't try to exploit the defense because the ball has to come out so quickly. The Bengals are in a world of hurt if all 3 of those 5 starters stay hurt.
Yeah, and you mentioned that. So the latest on there is that Jonah Williams, we'll throw up Ben Baby's tweet, our Bengals reporter, he has a dislocated kneecap. He is week to week as they now face off against a really difficult Bills team. Mina, go ahead.
Yeah, I was watching this game with an eye to the Ravens defense because they play Cincinnati so well.
Sure.
Shout out to Mike McDonald. You know, not getting to watch that defense anymore actually bums me out because they were playing such good football at the end. And they did that for a number of reasons, used a lot of disguise, showed pressure, dropped out. They actually rushed 3 with great success in this game.
Yeah.
The page out of Lou Anarumo's playbook. But when I was watching them, I wasn't thinking only the Ravens can do this against Cincinnati. When Jonah Williams went out, I was thinking, any defense is going to have success against this offensive line. And Joe Burrow's gotten so good at getting the ball out quickly this year. It's one of the great improvements he's made from last year to this one. But like you said, the margin for error for him is so small now. Every down, he has to be perfect.
And MK, one thing I want to point out, because everyone continues to say, well, he took them to the Super Bowl last year with a bad O-line, but defenses played them
very differently
last year. You know, he still was able to take shots downfield. Yesterday they had zero explosive plays in the game. The last time a team did that in the playoffs and won was 17 years ago.
No one's going to man them up on the outside anymore the way
that's
they
my
did
concern.
Last season.
Totally.
Well, and you think about that Bengals defense. They're a piece of this story, too. What was the issue there for them?
Lou Anarumo made some great adjustments, but quarterback run was their issue. And when you look at down the line, you know, I tell you guys this all the time. We know Josh Allen and what the Buffalo Bills are going to go to when they need plays. And perceivably, if you get to Kansas City, the one thing that's very underrated is Patrick Mahomes' legs in the playoffs. But when you look at what Huntley was able to do, and I know that this is a little different centric of an offense with the Baltimore
Ravens.
Yeah,
it's tough to match up against.
It's very difficult with all of the options. But when you think about what you can actually do against the Bengals because they adjust so well, is add that 11th guy on offense and try to take advantage of some of those three-man rushes that they try to run. They try to put Sam Hubbard sometimes in the spy. You got to find some issues with this defense outside of just lining up and playing straight-up football. And the two opponents that they have to face down the road, they can major in that.
Right.
And they can use personnel to get them in favorable situations with quarterback run. That was the one issue I saw with them outside of a few other things. But mainly, if I'm the Buffalo Bills and Ken Dorsey and I'm looking at that.
15 carries for Josh
Allen. I'm getting Josh Allen going.
Make him run. Okay, so later in the show, we're going to talk about Lamar Jackson and the Ravens locker room, how they're responding to some of the narrative out there around him. You don't want to miss that. And so much more coming your way from Tampa Bay as we get you ready for Bucks against Cowboys. We're just getting started. Hey, the Bills were able to hang on. They pulled out a close one against the Dolphins, but hear why Dan is comparing Josh Allen to his 2019 self. We'll tell you more. Plus, Dallas, will they break their 8-game road losing streak?
Yeah!
Marcus thinks the boys have the defense to do too.
Yeah!
Pre-game headquarters is brought to you by Domino's. Get a taste of variety when you order off of the Domino's Mix and Match menu.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
NFL Live is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Back to the action of Super Wild Card Weekend. Up until this point, we pick it up with the Bills hosting the Dolphins in an AFC Wild Card matchup. This one we get to in the second half. The Bills are up 20-17, and this is a guy, Zach Seiler, that we knew was going to have a good game, right, Marcus?
Sprinkle me, man. Sprinkle me, man. I told y'all the big fella was going to ball. He did his thing in this game. And he had to the tune of almost 2.5 sacks.
Ooh, stat sheet.
Dolphins took the lead. There's later in the third, first and goal for the Bills. Allen to Cole Beasley dives in the end zone. They added him in, and the Bills reclaimed the lead. So the next Bills possession, Allen looking for Gabe Davis. Spectacular toe tap catch right here, Dan.
This is a sick throw by Josh Allen. Just seeing that safety drift in, and then you talked about it, the sideline catch by Gabe Davis was special.
Let's go to the fourth quarter. Dolphins with first and goal, and Jeff Wilson
in.
Taking the handoff, diving in for the score. The Dolphins cut the deficit.
They just want to go away.
They were so feisty in this one. A few possessions later for the Dolphins, pay attention to the play clock. They're forced to burn the Dolphins for their final timeout to prevent a delay of game. This was
what are
a
we doing?
Route. We'll hear from him in a moment about that. No timeouts remaining. So later in the possession, it's 3rd and 2, and Salvon Ahmed takes the handoff. He's incredibly close to the first down, but some confusion, and he was ruled just short. That was kind of a theme there as the Dolphins were trying to make something happen on 4th and 1. Play clock again.
No.
Dolphins flag for delay of game, and that'll make it 4th and 6. So 4th down, the season is on the line. Remember, no Teddy Bridgewater, no Tua Tagovailoa. Skylar Thompson looking for Mike Gesicki, but that one's going to be incomplete. And the Bills survive a close one. So the Dolphins not able to get it done. The Bills escape with a win, but it wasn't pretty, okay? Josh Allen sacked seven times, threw two interceptions, lost a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. Allen, the fifth QB in the Super Bowl era to be sacked at least seven times and turn the ball over three times in a playoff game. Guys, a positive for Allen. He's the only one in that group that ended up actually winning the game. It is pretty remarkable that he was able to do it. And Mina, what did you make of Allen's performance?
I mean, watching him, you would have thought he was the double-digit underdog, not Skylar Thompson, because he was playing like it. Like, the amount of hero ball was not tenable. There is no reason why he should have had an average depth of target of 15 yards in this game. And I know Bills fans are a bit frustrated with their offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey, and I don't think he was perfect. I think the Bills should be varying the personnel groupings a little bit more. Yeah. But a lot of those deep incompletions, guys were open underneath, yeah, and Josh was just passing them up. And I it's almost like he's reverted to his younger self in some ways and undone a little bit of the progress we saw from him as a quarterback recently. But that's got to change because they're going to play face off against better quarterbacks, and his margin for error is going to be smaller.
Before you jump in, so average depth of target, is that meaning every time he throws the ball or
air yards per attempt?
Per attempt. 15 yards.
So every time he threw the ball, he averaged throwing it 15 yards down the field. That's a lot.
All three-pointers, basically. I'm going to your point, Mina, to piggyback off of you. It may be why – it could be a reason why this offensive line struggles a lot, right? You think about time in his hand and also taking those underneath. But, look, we'll focus on the seven sacks. Focus on how many pressures were in this game and how many times he had to move off the spot in order to make a play. And look – y'all know me. I love crushing quarterbacks. I like killing them. I like when they don't play well, so I can say something bad about them.
No.
But
really?
Josh Allen is playing how he has to play right now, because I think there are some deficiencies in this offensive line that is starting to be glaring. Now, I did that to say, I don't want to come on the show and tell y'all this every damn week, okay? But they don't want to run the football.
But, Marcus, so, they can't.
Listen, you always say that.
But they're not good at it.
You got to figure out some type of formation, something to create so this guy can get off of his arm.
I will tell you, I think that yesterday there were some moments of 12 personnel, one back, two tight end, when they went tight end wing relatively well, and 22, two back, two tight end. But that's the only time it works out well.
It's hard for me to hear that a professional football team that needs to run the football can't.
But I think it's important to, like, okay, so they get into those personnels, and it's a very predictable run situation.
Right.
They try to run the ball out of their, like, 11 spread gun, and they'll get into second and 11.
That's what
I'm
saying.
And that bad offensive line gets exposed.
That's why I wish they went with some of their heavier groupings and threw out of them a little bit more.
I agree.
To keep defenses on.
Y'all always want to throw the ball.
Well, it's against Miami. They have a good run defense, but they're not good against quick game, and I thought that they would have thrown it short a bit.
I think the way I would describe Josh yesterday was frantic. And when Josh has, like, that frantic mind, then he has frantic eyes, and then he has frantic feet. That got them into the hole, but the reality is they win the game by three. And that's because of the drive right before the half when he's special Josh Allen. Up top, Gabe Davis has a best release. You can go outside or inside. Tight end has a seam. It's cover two, trying to two-on-one. So he goes inside. That's great. Now Josh has got to pump the tight end. See how that safety, you can see his chest now. Now I've got that whole shot to the sideline. That happens because of the inside release and the pump fake by Josh. That's great, Josh Allen. Now third and six, again, right before the half. He's got to climb the pocket immediately, but so often yesterday he took off and ran. This time he just takes off, realizes he's got Gabe on the crosser versus man, little flick of the wrist. So those are the good, and they win the game because of it. But again, they were in that situation because too much of this. It's man-to-man with the safety kind of dropping down to pay attention to Josh and his legs. He is going to put his back foot on the ground, and now he takes off and becomes a runner. He's going to have a crosser for an 80-plus yard touchdown if he just plays quarterback and climbs the pocket instead of taking off. So I would disagree with you thinking that Josh has to play that way. I actually think Josh has to just reel it, because I don't think they're good enough because of the injuries on defense. I think I want him to reel it in just a little bit and quarterback more than rather than just be thinking you have to be a playmaker.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you brought up the point that he should be running it, what, 15-plus times against the Bengals.
And designed runs, yes.
Right, but you got to rein it in. Yeah. There's a mix there. We'll be talking about that all week long, and there's a lot more coming your way today. Danny Dimes had a day putting up record-setting numbers in Minnesota, but here, who we believe was the hero of the game. Don't worry, we're going to give Danny Dimes his love, too. You're watching NFL Live, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. We're back from Tampa Bay in just moments.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Oh boy, do we have a treat for you tonight. Super Wild Card Weekend culminates 8 Eastern on ABC, ESPN, and ESPN Plus. It's Dak Prescott and the Cowboys squaring off against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. Our megacast coverage also includes Peyton and Eli on ESPN2 and our ESPN Deportes Spanish language version. Don't miss it. The coverage is wall-to-wall here on ESPN as well. We now welcome in Adam Schefter for more on tonight. And Adam, big news around Ryan Jensen. What more can you tell us?
Laura, how about this? On the second day of training camp, Ryan Jensen suffered a knee injury that landed him on injured reserve. Well, this morning, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers activated Ryan Jensen, and he is expected to play tonight, which will be a big boost to Tampa's offensive line against Marcus Spears' Cowboys. The Buccaneers' offensive line has been dealing with injuries, but the fact that they get a Pro Bowl center back to a wild card game is a big move for Tampa. Meanwhile, the Cowboys' defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, he's scheduled to interview for the Denver Broncos' head coaching job on Friday. So we'll have to see whether the Cowboys win and advance to Sunday's game against the 49ers in the divisional playoff. And even if they don't win, Dan Quinn will have that interview on Friday right now as he gets ready for another round of talks with the Broncos. Remember last year, they considered him before hiring Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah, it's a good point. 4.5 hours away from kickoff. More Adam on the way on NFL Live. Thanks for being with us, Adam. Let's follow up a little bit more on Ryan Jensen and what it could mean. I mean, the return could come at a really good time for the Bucs, depending on how they play him, as they take on the Cowboys, who have arguably the best pass rush in the NFL. Dallas has pressured opposing quarterbacks on nearly 40% of their dropbacks, best in the league. On the other hand, the Bucs O-line ranked 25th in pass block win rate during the regular season. So, Dan, what issue do you have, though, with this Cowboys defense?
They consistently play single high safety man coverage on first down. I don't have any issue with them playing man on third down when they want to get their pressure package going. But when Dan Quinn has them playing man coverage, one-on-one on the outside on first down, my job as an offense is so easy. I'm just going to find the corner that's opposite Trayvon Diggs, and I'm going to throw right at him. And you can see a first clip where they're going to play first down, single high safety. That means one guy in the middle field, it's press man. Up top, Trayvon's down at the bottom. Off. That's great. I'm throwing up top. Stop route, ball's out on time. My guy is good. This is Chris Godwin tonight. This is cookies. One-on-one, stop route becomes a 9-yard completion. Yards after the catch, the 20. That's first and 10. Again, first and 10. Trayvon down at the bottom. Now the corner up top, he's going to play off. Great. Here, I'm going to take my shot. This is the reality. When you line up and play this way with Chris or Mike tonight, Tampa Bay and Tom Brady are going to take their opportunities to push the ball on those opportunities. And here's the thing. When you do that on first down, number one, you make my job easy as an offensive guy. Number two, your blitz package is done because I minimize it. And three, I don't have to think. It's recess. My guy better than your guy. Dan Quinn's got to help that corner opposite Trayvon Diggs on early downs tonight.
Here's my concern. The Cowboys defense have two clear weaknesses. One is what you just described, which is you can go after defensive backs, not named Trayvon Diggs. The other is defending the run horizontally off tackle. The problem is Tampa can't run off tackle. Second worst yards per carry in the NFL. And we have seen that despite the fact that they would be so much better off throwing on first down, yes, they'll still run it. Yes. And my prayer is like Byron Leftwich,
In this game, change your tendencies offensively because you can absolutely exploit what you just described on Dallas' defense.
No, totally.
And coming off what you just said, D.O., the single high is full run support, right? Like, Dan Quinn knows what we know and what we've been watching, trying to get an extra guy down. Here's the other part, too. Like, that, this whole game should be about Dallas getting Tampa to third and long. So whatever you need to do to allow your pass rush and that rabbit formation that he has with all of those rushes to get to this point. One, because we know Tom wants to get the ball out of his hands fast.
Right.
If you're in third and seven plus, you ain't getting the ball out of your hands fast if guys are coming up and playing strong coverage. And then, two, you get a chance to gain. Right? Remember us talking about Dallas earlier in the
third
season?
Third down blitz package. Yeah.
And then, too, when you don't bring an extra rusher, you have those Armstrongs, Micah, Fowler, DeMarcus Lawrence, those guys just running games and attacking protection as well. So there is the issue for tonight. Yeah. The run game gets going for
Tampa.
Can I
ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Are they good enough defensively to have really good, impactful run game stunts, not blitz game on third down, but are they good enough?
The problem is the girth of the guys on the interior. Like, you got to be – that three technique and the zero technique, the two defensive tackles, they got to be humming, bro. If you going to run games against the run, those dudes got to be able to scrape and literally get to an outside zone if it's coming, right? So there's your issue. If you feel good about those guys being able to do that, cool. Let DeMarcus Lawrence take an inside route and let your D-tackle rub off of it. But if he can't get there –
Got you.
And you giving up the edge immediately, you gassed.
I will remind you that when the two teams met in week one, Micah Parsons sacked Brady twice. You like the way that you heard about the Cowboys talking about using Micah tonight.
Absolutely.
We'll watch out for that. Time now for the FanDuel same game parlay. We go to Mina for this one. All right,
come
Mina.
On, NK.
So, over under a half interception for Dak tonight.
I'm sorry, Cowboys fans. I'm going over on this one. I mean, the guy's thrown a pick in his last seven games. He's facing an opportunistic Bucs defense.
Wow.
And a defense coordinator in Todd Bowles who knows how to design a blitz.
Wow.
I think he will give one away.
She's turned.
Let's go. Over under 1.5 touchdown passes for Tom Brady.
Over again. You'll like my last one. Tom Brady, first half of the season, averaged 1.1 touchdowns, second half, 1.8. As we've been discussing, there are weaknesses in that Dallas secondary. I think he'll take advantage of
it. I like the reasoning why.
Does Ezekiel Elliott score a touchdown tonight?
Oh, no.
Yes.
Hey!
Yes. In part because of opportunities. Zeke gets the third most touches inside the 10-yard line of any running back in the NFL. They want to feed him in the low red zone, and they will.
You brought me right back off the lid. We was
Marcus is sliding out of his chair as a result of that. By the way, we're going
to
pick this game a little bit later, so we'll really see who gets booed out here.
Now.
You've heard our picks. Now you can make your own.
Build a
same-game parlay with FanDuel Sportsbook, America's number one sportsbook. Let's get back to some of the great action from Super Wild Card Weekend. For this one, we go to Giants and the Vikings. This is a fun one. There were some people up here who might have picked the Giants. One of them is Marcus Spears. 14-7 game midway through the second quarter. Third and two from the Vikings, 27. Daniel Jones keeps it, picking up the first down, the 12-yard game difference maker, Dan Orlovsky.
Beautiful designed run on third and two. You got lead blockers out front. You can use your quarterback's athletic legs.
First drive of the second half. Giants, second and seven.
Shocking.
Vikings, 9.
Daniel Jones in the red zone, bootlegging to his left.
How?
It's so
pay
how
attention,
do they not see
Minnesota.
That coming?
Giants lead 24-14. Here's Minnesota with another chance, and Kirk Cousins connects with Irv Smith Jr. for the 3-yard touchdown. 24-21 game. Early fourth quarter. It's the same score. The Vikings going for it on fourth and one from the Giants 16. Dan Cousins tries to get the sneak, but there is a flag on the play. You see the up close view.
I probably would have jumped if there was 600 pounds of meat in front of me as well.
You would have. More of a chicken guy. All right, so ensuing Giants drive. It's second and 10 from Minnesota 45. Jones to Isaiah Hodgins. Mina, you pointed him out as a potential difference maker.
You just born children all over this league.
Look at that size and spatial awareness.
Hodgins finished with 105 yards in the game. The Giants driving later in the drive with under 8 to play. First and goal from the 2. Excuse me, that may not be first and goal from the 2. We're going to continue on. That's fourth down. So good job there. But the Vikings not able to get it done. The Giants hold on to win it 31-24. And Dan Daniel Jones put the Giants on his back yesterday, throwing for 301 yards, two touchdowns, while also leading the team with 78 rushing yards. He's the third QB in NFL history to have at least 300 passing yards and 75 rushing yards in a playoff game. He joins Lamar Jackson and Steve Young in that category. Jones is the only one among this group that also had multiple touchdown passes. He's the only QB that won the game. That's the most important stat. Dan, what did you like about the Giants' game plan on offense, first of all?
Daniel Jones was impressive, but his head coach and play caller, Mike Kafka, were equally impressive. And I know what I'm about to say, but Mike Kafka reminds me of a young Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan, the way he attacks defenses and not just calls plays. So this is 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end. Bunch to the top. Ball's on the bottom, right hash, okay? Now they're gonna motion that tight end over. Now when I set that bunch, that's a nickelback. We call them little people, okay? And then the jet motion's gonna come, so I take a bunch from the top and make it a bunch at the bottom. I'm gonna pull the center and that left tackle. Remember, the nickel is the guy that's left up top. I'm gonna kick this ball to Saquon. Now I have big body blocking little body, big blocking body blocking little body. That is a great play design for the Saquon touchdown. Now we go down into the red zone, 12 personnel. Two tight ends are up top. What I'm going to do is pull my left tackle and left guard. I'm going to ball fake, and I'm going to go counter Saquon. Now watch Patrick Peterson, because those two tight ends are 1-2 counting. They switch release. The inside guy goes outside. Patrick follows the outside guy down, and that's Daniel Bellinger for a wide-open touchdown. Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan, to me, are like the greatest formation manipulators, personnel managers. Mike Kafka is becoming that. The way they use their 21 personnel, the way they used Matt Breida as a wide receiver multiple times yesterday. And honestly, I watched and I was like, man, they use Saquon the same way San Francisco uses Christian McCaffrey when it comes to the variance of touches. As great as Daniel played, and he was great, the coaching by New York right now is special.
Yeah, I think obviously it starts at the top with Brian Daboll. Got to be 100%. A favorite for coach of the year. It wasn't just the offense, though, Marcus. What did you like defensively with the Giants?
Y'all ever been to a monster truck rally?
Yeah, here. I came to monster truck here years ago.
That's what the New York Giants defensive line looked like. Monster trucks, okay? Because they are so physical, and they get after the passer. And the great thing that Wink Martindale, defense coordinator for the New York Giants, in case y'all don't know, he loves the blitz. He loves to bring more people than you can block. Well, you don't have to. When you have brute force on the defensive line, you can commit four guys to getting after the passer, and they gave Kirk Cousins problems all night. But I love the fact that when you look at the Giants play, defensively and offensively, one, they play complementary football, but they know exactly who they are defensively. Yeah. Our dominant unit on this side of the ball is our defensive line. We're going to lean into that and make everyone behind them jobs easier. That's why you get a 4th-and-8 and a pressure on Kirk Cousins without having to send the extra pressure. And you tell your guys, look, tackle on the back end, it's going to come
out
fast.
Who's the gravedigger?
Dexter Lawrence.
Dexter Lawrence,
I like that,
completely took over this football game. I don't think it can be understated enough rewatching how dominant he was rushing from the nose.
I love what you're talking about, D lineman.
He's one of the three best defensive tackles in the league, I would say.
Yes.
So you talked a little bit about Wink Martindale, sly dog, changing up those tendencies, blitzing on only 20% of dropbacks, second lowest of the season. They got punished for blitzing the last time these teams met. The other thing he did was they played a ton of quarters in this game. We were talking about this earlier. Basically just sitting on everything and then tackling. And that's what struck me. You know, they had Xavier McKinney back in this game and Adoree Jackson. If you had asked me before the season, I would have said this Giants secondary is maybe the worst in the NFL. They have improved so much.
Yeah.
They were limiting every Minnesota pass catcher after the catch, and that's a big part of the reason why they won.
I don't usually do this. Y'all want a dope stat?
Yeah, sure.
Dope stat, all right?
All right.
When Justin Jefferson goes over 90 yards, the Minnesota Vikings score 28 points a game. They're 10-1 on the season.
Okay.
When he's held under 90, they're 3-3, and they average 18 points a game.
Dope. That was dope.
Who got you that?
Hey,
I
listen,
don't know.
You said that Don Martindale makes you call him Don until you play well.
Yeah,
well,
you can't call Wink Wink until you're a ball.
But we got somebody who balled up here, so we'll call him Wink, and we'll call him that for this reason. The Colts, according to Adam Schefter, requested permission to interview Wink Martindale for their head coaching job per a source. We'll keep an eye on this either way, but it'd be great to see this guy get a head coaching job. I think it's so much
fun. I'd see him in a suit.
Oh, man. You think he'd wear one?
Can you imagine?
Oh, boy. Coming up, Trevor Lawrence and the Jags bounce back, completing the third largest comeback in playoff history. Why Mina's giving Doug Peterson his flowers. Did you see him celebrate in the Waffle House? We got some Pirates here. We'll be right back with more from Bucks Beach.
I see you, player.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tonight, during the NFL Super Wild Card Game, tune in for the premiere of the exclusive new trailer for The Mandalorian Season 3, streaming March 1st, only on Disney+. We get back to some of the Saturday action from Super Wild Card Weekend. Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars visiting the Chargers in the Wild Card round. Under 7 minutes to play in the first half. The Jags trailing 24-0, 3rd and 10 from midfield. And Lawrence's throw over the middle picked off by Asante Samuel Jr. He had 4 first half interceptions. Jags would trail 27-7 at the halftime. Did not blink. 50 seconds left in the third quarter. Jags down 30-14. Lawrence connects with Zay Jones, Dan.
A little bit of a cover 3 beater. They get the safety backside to sit. Zay Jones replaces it. Great throw.
Slowly cutting the lead, 30-20, under 6 minutes to go. Lawrence finding Christian Kirk on the right side of the end zone. And after a Chargers penalty, Jaguars will go for 2 with better field position. 2-point conversion attempt. Lawrence says, I'll take it in myself for 2. Doug Peterson encouraging it. More on that in just a bit. The Jags now down only 30-28. What a play. Travis Etienne takes it to the outside, gets the first down and much more.
I love that play call. Reminded me of what Penn State ran a little bit this year in college football, those 3 people in the backfield.
Riley Patterson can win it, and that's exactly what he does. The 36-yard field goal through the uprights. Jags win 31-30. Trevor Lawrence, what a game. He had the 4 touchdowns later. He had the 4 interceptions earlier, and he bounced back in a big way. Within the Jaguars' first 7 drives of the game, he had those 4 interceptions. Over the final 5 drives of the game, Lawrence completed nearly 80% of his passes for 253 yards, 4 tutties, leading the Jaguars to points on every one of those drives as they pulled off the third largest comeback in NFL postseason history. Nina, what do you think changed for Lawrence in that second half?
I feel like the theme of today could be coaching matters, especially going from talking about the Giants to this game, because Doug Peterson's my number 2 for Coach of the Year. So in the first half, it was kind of what we thought might happen with the Chargers defense using so much disguise, compressing things, that coverage was so sticky. And some of the interceptions weren't, you know, not all of them were on Trevor, but he didn't play a good half. So you come out in the second half and they go tempo to eliminate the disguise factor.
Smart.
Peterson starts dialing up easy completions to the outside, make those Chargers DBs who are so good at coverage tackle in space and then run Etienne off tackle. And then as this goes on, he starts building his confidence. Mm. The targets get a little bit deeper on the outside. I thought it was a masterful effort by a head coach to calm his young quarterback and then come out with a game plan to basically get him back into it.
And then in the situational football moments, you know, we often talk about man coverage and beating it and only correlate it to the pass game. And I thought Doug was great in some very specific areas of attacking man coverage to utilize the run game. Early on, they hop the back, and they're going to pull the backside tackle here. It's man-to-man. Watch the right side of your screen. You jab step with the back to hold that backside linebacker. The receiver comes outside in, cracks the safety. Corner has to follow, and now ETN gets out on the edge. Now we go to that 4th and 1, right? Late in the game, Doug Peterson calls timeout. Very similar situation. Zay Jones, it's man coverage. You go block the safety. Corner has to follow you very quickly, and then he's the guy that it's expected to, quote-unquote, replace the edge. That's Asante Samuel. That's a guy that they know not only schematically that they can go after in the run game, but also personnel-wise. And it was brilliant by Doug knowing in that situation, I don't have to beat man throwing the ball. I could beat man by designing a great run game.
You know, for every team that makes a huge comeback, Marcus loves the run game. Huge comeback means that some team that was supposed to win and had a huge lead didn't win. In this case, that's the Chargers. So let's get Adam Schefter back in here because there has been conversation around Brandon Staley, the head coach, and his job security. Where do we stand there, Adam?
Well, Laura, the early indications right now are that Brandon Staley's going to be safe. Now, let's see how these meetings shake out over the course of the day. Nothing's ever final. Everything's always fluid in this particular league. I think there'll be changes that come to that staff in Los Angeles with the Chargers, and I think those changes probably going to involve assistant coaches on the offensive side of the football. You can't lose a game like that in which Austin Eckler doesn't have a single rushing yard in the second half, that you go in with a 20-point lead where you run the football from running backs seven times, throw the football 22 times, and not think that there's not going to be some changes to the offensive staff. I, right now, don't suspect that it's going to involve Brandon Staley. I think the Chargers organization wants to see him continue to grow, learn, improve, mature as a head coach, and it sounds like that is the lean. But they're having conversations today. We'll see how that works out, but I do expect that there will be some changes, at least on the offensive side.
Yeah, you know, Adam brought up just some of the context of the game there, Marcus, and I think that's probably why you're slouching in your chair. What do you think about Staley and his job coaching, specifically in this game, but even before that, too? There were some things that happened. Mike Williams sticks out, certainly.
I think it should be in question, all right? Yeah. I'm fine with Brandon Staley continuing to be the head coach of the Chargers. It's not one of those things I'm going to go on the hill and fight a battle for. But I also think you got a question about what you have on this team, right? Like, you guys, this goes beyond. Think of the commitments that they made to compete in this division this year, right? And I know injuries was a big part of that. And if you give him credit for holding it together, he deservedly so. But this offensive possession right here is why I'm pissed off, right? This is in the red zone in the first quarter. You come out and throw three straight passes with Justin Herbert. You get nothing out of this. He's standing in the middle of the pocket. The Jacksonville Jaguars are playing comfortable defense. Oh, coincidentally, you get in the red zone again and you run the football. You hand it off to your back. Three straight times you get a rock to Austin Eckler, and here's another hit where you get a first down on this carry, and then the next one is a touchdown. So I'm going to ask y'all this, because y'all get mad at me and fight me about the run game.
Yeah.
All right? And I'm going to ask you this. As a defensive guy, because the great thing about when we together, we look at it through a different prism, right?
Yeah.
I know for a fact it's harder to defend football teams when they make a commitment to making sure you pay attention to the run game.
Yeah.
And also in the red zone, we want you to throw the football. That's what we want to do. Now, you got cyborgs like the Julio Jones or the Calvin Johnsons where you just say, go win.
Right.
But when you look at the Los Angeles Chargers and hear what Adam Schefter just said, as a head coach, this is why I can't give Staley a pass. Hey, Joe Lombardi, I need you to run the football.
Mm. We're going to leave it there and answer it in the commercial break because we got to go. So anyway, we'll find out what that is. Okay, coming up next, Mike McDaniel's time management. Is it to blame for the Dolphins' season coming to an end? Well, Marcus is going to tell us why he's hot over these inexcusable mistakes. That's next. And as we go to break, want to make sure you know about the latest E60 project, The Perfect Machine, which chronicles the unbeaten Miami Dolphins run that culminated in a Super Bowl title back in 1973, a feat still unmatched 50 years later. Here's a preview.
Came close. Came about that close. But you know what? And being the only undefeated team ever, that right there is the universe.
Perfectville, still population one.
The Miami Dolphins, they will remain football's greatest perfect team of all time.
When you have an opportunity to do something that nobody else has ever done, you want to make sure you seize that opportunity. And we did.
They did something that was so special. I don't want to see that ever happen again.
Immortality is great. Why would you want to share immortality?
Would a team match the 72 Dolphins that go undefeated?
The ghosts start to come up from 50 years ago.
And the Miami Dolphins says, I don't think so.
History remains untouched.
What's the second largest canyon in the country? Nobody cares. There is no besting of the Grand Canyon.
People make the Hall of Fame. There's all pros. You win Super Bowls. There's only been one team that's been perfect.
There's a phenomenon in the National Football League this year.
You see this, Don Perignon? I'm offering this to the next team that goes unbeaten.
But all over the land on this Sunday night, the champagne corks have been popping.
Is it the champagne on ice somewhere?
So come get this champagne. All you gotta do is beat everybody.
Lift every voice and sing.
Being a black man growing up, you stand on the shoulders of many people, and he was one of them. But for him to stand up and be so disruptive with his words, to get assassinated, you know, it's, you know, he sacrificed his life to do things the right way. And, you know, you admire that about the man.
On this MLK Day, we remember the great Martin Luther King Jr. You see the campus of University of South Florida with their memorial to Martin Luther King, and we honor him today as we get ready for Bucks Cowboys tonight in the finale of what's already been a dynamic Super Wild Card weekend. For more on tonight's game, we check back in at the Domino's pregame headquarters, and look who's here. It's Lisa Salters. Hey, Lisa.
So glad to have you
here. We're all here.
I got to get out there so I can see you guys in person.
Come over here and give us a hug, Lisa.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll make sure that ends up on TV,
too. You're not too far, though, are you?
We're not. You're right there. I can practically see it.
Okay.
Hey, Lisa, think about this, okay? Tom Brady has essentially played 3 full seasons of just playoff games.
Yeah.
Tonight's going to be his 48th postseason start, and he's won more playoff games, 35, than any other NFL player has ever even played in. But we almost saw the end after last season, his brief retirement. So how much of a conversation is there at One Buck Place around Brady's future with this team?
Yeah, Laura, well, whether or not this will be Tom Brady's last playoff run, Bucks players say they don't talk about it. Julio Jones said, "We are here right now. That's all that matters." And Chris Godwin said, because of who Tom Brady is, the career that he's had, he understands the speculation about what's next for TB12. But he said, honestly, we do not ever address it, especially Tom, because he's always so hyper-focused on the moment. Now, Tom Brady told us this weekend he wants to get through this season. Take some time, decompress, get some clarity before he makes any decisions about his future. But when talking about this game, he was very clear. He likes their chances because for the first time since really the beginning of this season, the Bucks offense is healthy, including Pro Bowl center Ryan Jensen, just activated off IR this morning and expected to play some tonight. We knew that Julio Jones and Leonard Fournette have battled injuries, and both of them say that they are now 100%. Mike Evans, he struggled to make it to game days during certain parts of the season, which is why he and Brady seemed a little off at times, but Evans finally looked like himself week 17 when he exploded for 207 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. Tom Brady said, "I feel good about us taking the field healthy. Now let's go see what we can do."
Yeah, Lisa, it does feel like they're getting healthy, maybe just in the nick of time, exactly what Tom Brady would want to see. Thanks to Lisa Salters. We'll see you on the game tonight.
I'm coming to see you right now.
Come over here and just visit with us for a little bit, okay? But problem is, we won't let her leave. Let's get to the Cowboys side of this, the Cowboys offense and Dak Prescott. In a loss to the Commanders last Sunday, Dak threw an interception for the 7th straight game. That's the longest streak by any QB this season. No QB threw more interceptions than Prescott during the regular season. That's despite the fact that he only played in 12 games. Of Prescott's 15 interceptions, 11 of them came against zone coverage. Well, tonight, he faces a Bucs defense that plays zone coverage at the 6th highest rate in the NFL. We heard some Cowboys fans cheering for a little bit there, and then they're like, oh, this is actually not a good Dak thing. Don't worry. There's better stuff coming in just a little bit on the Cowboys than on Dak Prescott.
Look at my man.
But Dan.
That chain.
Why, Dan's already bought some shirts from some fans. You might go get the chain. Why has Dak struggled so much with interceptions?
Searching. It's searching to go to try to find a play that's not there. And I'd say 2 things tonight. Don't go searching. Just run the play. You're a good enough player. And the second thing is no fear. Let's go be aggressive. Not reckless, but go be aggressive. Last week versus Washington, a perfect example. They take slant flat and essentially run sluggo rail. It's man coverage. You get the corner to squat. But you decide to throw the backside curl route. You could throw that ball to CD down the field or the tight end on the rail route. But almost like the I don't want to do anything bad type of feeling overcomes you. And there's that world he's got to live in. Be aggressive, not reckless, not careless with the football. But also don't try to force things down the field that are not there.
You got that's a great point. And these guys hear and see, you know, what everybody says, even throughout the league about the interceptions. And you like the first thing you think is I need to reel it in.
That's the worst thing.
It's the worst thing. Totally. You need to be nobody's going to tell Steph Curry not to shoot if he missed 17 three-pointers. They're going to tell him shoot 18, okay? Here's the thing for me too, though, and I've said it all season long, and you guys know this. I said this season for the Dallas Cowboys comes down to Kellen Moore and Dak Prescott.
Right.
Right? You look at this team and everybody talked about the roster and all of that. This is the catalyst for what they have the ability to do in this playoffs. You got to get Dak on the move too, man. Like, we talk about these interceptions. All of them are standing in the center of the pocket. Let him go be a playmaker. And Dak has to understand as well that I need to go be a playmaker with my legs when those things aren't there.
Okay.
Look at this bootleg, Dan. This was after the interception against Tampa. You come back, you get him on the outside. He can see things are clear for him. And obviously these crossers with CeeDee Lamb and how he's worked the middle of the field, those over routes that he runs. I don't believe that Dak Prescott has been playing and giving defenses things to think about. And I put that on Kellen Moore, more than I put it on Dak Prescott. Because after you watch the turnovers over and over again, you got to go back to the table and say, okay, what can we do different to get him in the rhythm, right? It's just like basketball. Hey, man, shoot some 15-footers
before
you get out there to the three-point line. They got to move him in this game.
Well, you know what might help is if the run game was a little bit better, right? Mina, why has that struggled so much for Dallas during this season?
This has been as big of a problem for the Cowboys as the interceptions, and I would contend they're probably related because Dak feels like he has to throw the team back into contention. For me, what jumps out is they're not getting any push between the tackles. First 10 weeks of the season, Dallas ranked fourth in the NFL, yards per carry between the tackles, 4.9. Second half of the season, 28th. 3.6 yards per carry. That is a massive difference in the run game. I think a lot of it, Marcus, is because of all the change on the offensive line. It's kind of been musical chairs. It continues to be. But if they can't get that right, Dak's going to continue to press.
I think one of those things, too, with their run game is they got to figure out do they want to be a dominant zone team?
Yeah.
Or do they want to be a dominant gap team? I always thought that the Cowboys were the best when they pull people. I think their pin pull is the best. But to your point, they lose Terrence Steele. Is their right tackle who's replacing him comfortable enough to do those things? Do they have the tight ends in the blocking game to do it as well?
No doubt. The pressure is squarely on these Cowboys in a lot of ways tonight. Dak Prescott 1-3 in his playoff career. All four of those games were decided by one score, 8 points or less. All right, let's get back to Sunday and Super Wild Card Weekend. This was an interesting one. The Bills hosting the Dolphins in an AFC Wild Card matchup. We're going to pick it up in the second half. The Bills up only by 3 points, 20-17. Josh Allen dropping back to pass, but Zach Seiler, had other plans. Fans recovering in the end zone.
Get it, big fella.
Get it, big fella. Marcus thought he was going to have a good game. Turns out he did.
Well,
Dolphins take the lead. 24-20.
Go figure.
Later in the third, first and goal for the Bills. Allen to Cole Beasley diving into the end zone. The Bills reclaim the lead. We go to the next Bills possession, and Josh Allen, this might have been, Dan, you think this was his best throw of the game?
Oh, this is ridiculous. He stares to the right to try to get the one-on-one matchup, sees the backside safety, turn his hips and drift in, and then throws a ball beautifully over the corner right to the back pylon.
So now the Bills extending their lead, 34-24, ahead to the fourth quarter. Dolphins first goal. Jeff Wilson diving in for the score, and the Dolphins cutting the deficit to 3. They just would not go away in this one. A few possessions later for Miami. Pay attention to the play clock. This is where it starts to get a little wonky for him, Dan.
You have to pop that timeout. It's 3rd and 10, thinking, okay, we got to make sure we try to keep this somewhat manageable. Can't get into 3rd and 15. They use their final timeout.
Yeah, so now no timeouts remaining later in the possession, 3rd and 2. And the handoff there, but incredibly close to the first down for Ahmed, but then there's some confusion and it was a rule just short. You're seeing on 4th and 1, watch the play clock again. Dolphins flag for delay of game. This is what just can't happen in these moments as it makes it fourth and six.
It's a tough situation for Mike McDaniel to be in that's on the road with a third string quarterback.
Right. It's a good point. Skylar Thompson in there and the Bills survive. Here's more on the play clock situation, the management for Mike McDaniel.
Whether it was officials or coaching, you know, there was some communication that we had gotten the first down. So then we were deploying a group of players for the first and 10 call. And then it was articulated that no, it was fourth down. So that miscommunication, that's all the stuff that you do in this business is you never stop finding the things that you can improve on. And it was a piece of the reason, you know, why we're unable to come out with a victory, but it definitely wasn't the only reason.
Mike, can we just get clarity because it might be a thing? Did the refs tell you it was first down, or did your own guys upstairs?
I don't think it was the refs. I think it was from the headset, to be honest. Okay. It didn't really matter to me because I'm not like pointing fingers, but I'm pretty sure. I don't think I saw a sign.
Okay, so that's interesting from McDaniel. Yeah. As we sift through all this, though, I mean, Dan, one of the things that kind of stuck out to us, you didn't see this happening with the Dolphins with Tua Tagovailoa
right.
or Teddy Bridgewater. So it made us wonder, how complicated is the play-calling verbiage for this Dolphins offense?
Yeah, so listen, I brought actually a call sheet. I don't know what year this is from. This is from Houston with Gary Kubiak, which is from this offense. So just so everybody at home has a little bit of a glimpse and understanding of how wordy these offenses are, these Ooh. West Coast systems that – have a lot of different tags when it comes to formations and personnel. So I think this is a good learning opportunity for everybody. So this is how it works. When Ahmed goes to the ground right there, the clock starts to wind, the 40-second play clock. Automatically, Mike McDaniel's like, all right, 11 personnel, because he thinks it's first down, right? 11 personnel. Then he gets word, hey, coach, down, it's fourth and one. Oh, gosh, so I have to go from a first down play call to a fourth down play call. Check that. Give me 22. That's 10 seconds right there. And then 22 personnel, hey, guys, it's fourth and one, so you got to change your personnel. There's another 4 or 5 seconds. And then he's got to give a play call like, hey, west, right, zoom, 18, Zorro, can it with, get in the gun, halfback, right, outside, scat, right, you and zebra, basic, return, go double count. Remember, if the middle linebacker run through, you could take the check down. That's 15 Whoa. Seconds right there. So doing that in that moment with Tua Tagovailoa would be incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
Doing it with a third-string quarterback and having to change all that stuff, everyone's killing Mike McDaniel. You have 40 seconds to make all those different decisions and communications. That is an incredibly difficult situation. I think it's a bad break for the coach being in that moment with a third-string quarterback.
Hey, yeah, what a time. Get the damn play call in, man.
Oh, my listen, gosh,
this
dude.
This is And I get what you're saying. I'm being.
There's a lot of.
But I understand when you're going into that environment, and too, you in that environment as well. Like, you guys, this is when crowd noise and fans and discombobulation comes to play, not only with a third string quarterback, but D, it's four of them, bro, in one game.
Yeah.
And then, too, as a defensive guy, and I look, again, dude, we done scored on defense, we've turned the football over, and the opportunities where we have the ball in our hands. We can't get a play call in. Now, I understand the difficulty of it, but when I'm in the locker room, when the whole world gave us no shot against the Buffalo Bills, and we put in work like that defensively, you can't tell us right now that you couldn't get the play call in. That just doesn't suffice for what we were able to do on the defensive side.
I have two thoughts, one of which was I asked our guy Ryan Bissell, who does stats for us, if this was an issue at all during the regular season. And the Dolphins did kill the third most clock of any team in the NFL. Yep. So this is an ongoing part, I think, of, as he said, Mike McDaniel's growth as a head coach, streamlining that operation next year. But I also think it shouldn't detract from the fact that they went into Buffalo and almost
played great.
Beat them.
He was phenomenal.
With the seventh round.
Yeah.
I mean, they left yards on the field with drops. Yep. Guys were wide open. I thought he called the hell of a game. I thought Josh Boyer, the defense coordinator, made some good adjustments as it went on. So it's a rough way for the season to end, but I don't want it to completely overshadow what that team accomplished in this particular
And they
game.
Did they think when they went to Buffalo early.
Yeah,
the
they did.
Season.
It would have made a difference if Tua was there. Of the 8 delay of game penalties this season. Only two of them happened with Tua Tagovailoa on the field. We got more That's coming your way stat. Here, I know. On NFL Live, live from Tampa Bay, coming up this offseason will be
come on, Lamar!
When it comes to Lamar and the Ravens. Why
oh,
Dan
boy.
Feels this could be bad for all parties.
Oh,
That's
boy.
Next. On, and they have opened up the parking lots out here. The fans are coming in. There's a Bills fan in the crowd.
Where's the Bills fan?
He's right there with
there he
his
is.
Hands up, surrounded by many Cowboys and Bucks fans.
We got the 49ers.
Kickoff. We'll be right back.
I got a tape for the...
The Ravens, a one-point lead.
There's never any panic. It's going to be tough. It's going to be ugly. It's playoff football. I'm always ready.
Touchdown for Joe Burrow, and the Bengals have the lead. Hunt no. sticks the ball out. The Bengals have the ball. Touchdown! 8 seconds to go. The Bengals up by seven. Huntley back to throw. Batted down. Incomplete.
Yeah.
The clock hits
Over.
Zero. And the Bengals are heading to Buffalo.
Glad to have you on NFL Live. We're coming your way right outside Raymond James Stadium as we get ready for Bucks Cowboys here on ESPN and ABC. But the Ravens now done with their season as they were not able to get it done against the Bengals. The Bengals end up winning this game. And you can see the last couple seasons from Lamar Jackson. Let's bring Adam Schefter back in here for a little bit more, because now all the attention with their season done goes to Lamar's contract negotiations. Adam, where are we with this and what do we know?
Well, Laura, his contract's up after this season. I think the Baltimore Ravens are expected to put the franchise tag on him. And then the question becomes, do they and are they able to sign him to a long-term extension, or do they look to see if there's a team that's willing to try to sign him to an offer sheet and then whether or not they're open to a trade? But Lamar's future is in question after an off-season here in which they essentially did not have him play the last five games of the season, last six games. A lot of questions. He says he had a sprained PCL. So there's a whole host of issues here that both sides will take into the offseason. But it will become one of the biggest offseason quarterback question marks, whether Lamar stays or goes in Baltimore and how the Ravens handle it.
Yeah, and Adam, as you saw there off the top, there's no question how valuable Lamar Jackson is. The Ravens 3-8 over the last two seasons when Jackson is out of the lineup. They've averaged over seven fewer points per game in the contest. That's something that Dobbins noticed, right? The Ravens running back J.K. Dobbins weighed in on Lamar not being out there last night, saying, quote, "If we had Lamar, we would have won." Two. Now, listen, some of that was because he was asked about it. He didn't just offer up that information.
Sure,
but we heard players before the game and now after the game talking about Lamar not being out there. Plus, he wasn't even at the game last night in Cincinnati. That's been a big topic. You make a lot out of that, Dan?
I don't.
Deal?
Yeah. So, two things. First of all, I think it's important to put into context Lamar not being there. That was a road game. Lamar has not gone to any road game since being on the injured reserve and not being a part of the team when it comes to active roster, okay? So we got to stop making a big deal out of that and trying to create a narrative around Lamar.
Right.
That's not a new. That's out there, okay?
Yep.
I think the second thing that is, I feel like a person who is in the locker room uncomfortable is you start the week and Sammy Watkins makes a comment, "I just wish he would find a way to hobble out there," okay? And then J.K. Dobbins last night says, "Man, if we had Lamar, we win," okay? And then Marlon Humphrey, who's one of their leaders, says, "I hope he's here for a long time." I just feel like the conversation divided, right? Like it feels we got different teammates on different sides of what this conversation is right now and certainly how I feel it's going to be in the offseason, man.
Listen, man, I'm going to listen to J.K. Dobbins and I'm going to listen to Marlon Humphrey, right? They've been around him and they know the impact of Lamar Jackson, Marlon Humphrey more than anything. I understand what Sammy Watkins is saying, right? Early in the week, you're talking about game planning, how effective Lamar could be. Don't hobble out there. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in life, is to go out there and just tape it up. It's so stupid because, one, we're in a situation where your quarterback literally is dictating how you play football,
right,
as we saw from Tyler Huntley when he used his legs. And the other thing is this. Yo, the elephant in the room is you ain't paid me no money to go play on a sprained MCL or a PCL or whatever I have going on. So those comments, I believe, from Dobbins and Marlon Humphrey were directed towards the Ravens brass and the people in the front office. As you should know how important he is. Yeah. Forget the record we just put up. Forget what we just saw with the wins and the losses when Lamar Jackson don't play. Use your damn eyes when he's on the field and he's playing for this football team of how effective they – and they were right.
Yeah.
The way they played last night, if Lamar Jackson was the quarterback, they probably would have won the game.
I just don't see any way the Ravens move on from Lamar Jackson and don't take serious steps back as a football team. I mean, let's consider the options. First of all, any of the top free agents, trade candidates like Derek Carr, who has jurisdiction over where he goes, they don't want to go to this team.
Right.
Just be honest. This offense is not quarterback friendly. And then beyond that, let's say they're able to get that Godfather deal for a pick at the top of the draft. And then, you know, they're able to trade that and draft a rookie. You draft a guy praying he ends up anywhere close to Lamar Jackson. And then on top of that, the timeline is all wrong. You guys watch that defense. This team should be making a deep playoff run.
Yeah.
So if they were to move on to a rookie, they would be on the entirely wrong timeline.
Yeah.
It just doesn't add up to me beyond the message that it would send to the locker room to not reward a guy who has been so good for your organization.
It just has been gross negligence.
Yeah.
It's been gross negligence.
By the Ravens.
By this franchise, man.
Because like, you think they should have just got the deal done and paid him his money.
Last night we watched this offense split a tight end out to play X receiver.
Mark Andrews, right.
Because Bateman wasn't available. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
We watched them split a tight end out to play X receiver.
Right.
And we watched the Cincinnati Bengals put three guys on the field that may be ones when the contracts come up and they got to go to another team.
So they should have paid him but also gotten him a receiver.
Yes!
Yeah. I think two things.
Your voice just went.
Watch this weekend, Baltimore. Okay, you guys are a great organization. The final four in your conference, Trevor Lawrence, number one pick. Joe Burrow, number one pick. Patrick Mahomes, reigning MVP, will be the MVP. And then Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
If you don't have a dude at that position for the next...
What are we
these guys aren't
about?
Going anywhere now.
Hey,
they're here for 10 years.
You're right.
You better have a dude at quarterback. And then the receiver, it cannot be a draft pick. They have to go get a bona fide star NFL wideout.
This is the final season on Lamar Jackson's rookie contract. The Ravens have the option to use the franchise tag on him, too. So we'll keep an eye on that in this offseason. Still to come on NFL Live from Tampa. What edge do Brady and the Bucks have over the Cowboys tonight? Hear who Nina has being the difference maker. You're watching NFL Live, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. It's gorgeous out here by Tampa Bay. We're going to head over to those docks a little bit later.
Hey.
We've got to watch the game first.
Hey.
Look at the cute dog. We'll be right back.
I love Tampa. It is
Tampa's
a great
gorgeous
city.
Don't miss Monday Night Countdown after us here tonight at 6 p.m. on ESPN and also streaming live on the ESPN app. Susie and the guys are going to take over this set right here and get you ready right up until kickoff of Bucks and Cowboys. And new on NFL Live, the Manning Cast featuring Eli and Peyton Manning. This evening, the guest list is fascinating, guys. I love this one. Dion, number one. Dan Campbell, number two. That's
nice.
Going to be a whole lot of fun. Teddy Bruschi, the great Bruschi, joins the show. This one, of course, on ESPN2. And
oh, I'm watching Dan Campbell.
Yeah, you
right?
are.
We got to turn into Dan.
Okay,
teammate.
We got some parrots out here. They're getting ready to go.
Oh, hold on.
I heard them trying to repeat Dan, but they couldn't really
Look at
get
Dan.
It out.
Holly, want a cracker?
That was Dan.
You're
going to
make that one fly
night.
Away. Let's get out of
You said I'd become that at night?
Hey, Adam, don't worry. I'm not sending those parrots over to you.
Send them over, Laura. Send them over.
Well, imagine them trying to, like, repeat all the news that you put out. There is a lot of news, actually, ahead of this game. Let's start with Ryan Jensen and his return, Adam.
Well, Laura, he hurt his knee on the second day of training camp, was placed on injury reserve, and today the Buccaneers activated their Pro Bowl center, and he is expected to make his season debut tonight in the wild card game against the Dallas Cowboys, a big boost to the Buccaneers' offensive line as they take on Dallas. And the Dallas defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, is scheduled to interview for the Denver Broncos head coaching job on Friday. And obviously, he's drawn interest. He talked with Denver last year. The Broncos liked him last year. They still like him this year. The Broncos also will meet tomorrow morning with Sean Payton before they meet with Raheem Morris. And one other note, moments ago, the Arizona Cardinals hired the Tennessee Titans director of player personnel, Monty Ossenfort, as their general manager. So Arizona has filled the position that was vacated after Steve Keim stepped down. The Cardinals' new GM is Monty Ossenfort.
That's interesting. We'll continue to see all of that news coming in. And, of course, you can see Adam at 6 on Monday Night Countdown right here on ESPN. Tonight's game is a rematch from Week 1 when the Bucs defense held the Cowboys to just 3 points, the second fewest points that the Cowboys have scored in any game, started by Dak Prescott. Prior to leaving the game in the fourth quarter due to a thumb injury, Dak completed only 48% of his passes, averaged fewer than 5 yards per attempt. So, Mina, if you're that Bucs defense, what's one thing you want to take away from Dallas tonight? Certainly, different time of the year, different team even than it was at that point.
It all starts with CeeDee Lamb, who they had success against the first time these teams played, but that was a very different Dallas team. Michael Gallup wasn't in the mix to free up Lamb a little. And since then, the Bucs have struggled to cover slot receivers, third worst in the NFL in EPA per play. So I'll be curious to see a couple of things. Antoine Winfield Jr. has been playing in the slot for them. I wonder if they might move him to safety in their sub packages and then play more too high. Because if they play as
who
much cover
inside?
Three, Sean Murphy Button would be my pick.
Okay.
If they play as much cover three as they normally do, CeeDee Lamb will kill them with crossers. So I would actually put two safeties on the field and play cover two.
I'm very interested to see what the plan is from Tampa as far as using Lavonte David and Devin White in some of that A-gap pressure. Both of them are dominant blitzers from the linebacker position. And if your answer, if you don't have any answers for that, if you're Kellen Moore, this is going to give you a problem. This offensive line has been much maligned now. We've talked about a lot of things with Dak Prescott and the skill position players, but in pass protection, they have struggled. So do you get Tony Pollard and find opportunities for screens? Do you get him on the edge? Mm. Do you line him up in the slot sometimes to remove a linebacker out of the box or let them determine if we're going to be in nickel and we'll play him with a safety or a nickel back? So I'm very interested to see the chess match, how they use Tony Pollard to kind of negate what Devin White and Lavonte David, negate them from the rush. But also, like, it comes a time for Kellen Moore where you got to start kind of dictating what you want the defense to do. I feel like they've been very conservative and just trying to kind of just ease their way, like you said about Daboll. I'm going
like
to make you defend.
Right now. Dan
is beaming ear to ear.
Well, you know,
like,
we learn from each other.
Happy.
We learn things.
Yeah, it's so cute.
We learn.
So I think one of the things that happens when teams play against the Buccaneers defense and they think, well, they're so fast, they get scared to spread them out. And if I was Kellen tonight, I would spread this defense out and get the ball to the perimeter in multiple ways as quickly as possible. It's basically like an extension of the run game. Don't give me bunch. Widen that bunch to the top of the screen. Run a little bit of a zone reader RPO. Kick that ball outside. I'm not looking for 15, 20 yards, but give me 6, 7, 8 and make this defense go sideline to sideline and display that speed. The widened bunch. I can even set more formation into the boundary and create those design swing screens where we've seen this out of San Francisco. We've seen it out of Seattle. I get lead blockers out in front, and all those guys, I want the best player on this defense is Vita Vea. How do I take the best player out? Make him go sideline. I'm not scared of Tampa's speed. I respect it, but I want to see it over four quarters.
Both teams should do that, spread to run in this game.
I love that, absolutely. And that's why that's
the,
kind of the Pollard touches that you're talking about, the touches you're talking about.
You think about last year, too, when McVay, when they came down for the playoff game. The aggression for Tampa was used against them.
Absolutely.
That's why the deep ball was effective with Cooper Kupp. How do you get them to play that way?
Yeah.
That's the question Kellen Moore going to have to answer.
It is interesting. This season, the Bucs defense has held opposing QBs to the third lowest QBR in the NFL when blitzing.
Yep.
But sometimes you do want them to do that if you're the opposing offense.
Got to scare them out of it.
There's some cat and mouse in tonight's game when it comes to the strategy. Coming up next on NFL Live, Brock Purdy looked like a veteran.
Helped
his team advance. This wild card weekend, Dan will show us just how special his performance was. More coming your way here. NFL Live taking over Bucks Beach as we get you ready for Bucks and Cowboys in just a few hours.
It's coming.
Here on
I told you it was coming.
ABC, ESPN2, and ESPN Plus. See you in a minute. We're back on NFL Live from Tampa Bay. We're going to get back to some of the action from Super Wild Card Weekend. Giants and Vikings. Everyone going on the Daniel Jones apology tour. And Dan Orlovsky, it's because of some of the things he did in this game.
I think I'm the president of it. Really good design on 3rd and 2. Lead blocker, get your athletic quarterback on the edge.
First drive of the second half. Giants second, seven for the Vikings, nine. Faking the handoff and Bellinger in for the 9-yard score. The Giants lead 24-14. So let's see what the Vikings can do to strike back. Second and goal, and Kirk Cousins connects with Irv Smith Jr. That's a 3-yard touchdown. It's a 24-21 game. Marcus picked the Giants, by the way.
I sure did.
And his nose.
Early fourth quarter.
Sure did.
No, he didn't. Goodness gracious. Same score. Vikings go for it on fourth and one from the Giants 16. What'd you see here, Dan?
Yeah, just, I mean, in those moments, you're so tense. You're trying to jump if you're Darisaw, the left tackle. He just blinked too early.
So the Vikings settle for the field goal, and we're tied.
This is
at
a big time ball, bro.
Let's go.
Yo, moving to your left, trying to find Hodgins. Not only is the ball perfect, the feet on the sidelines by the undrafted players, just spectacular.
That's Mina people.
Mina called it. Later in the drive, with under eight to play, first and goal from the second, Saquon Barkley barreling through the end zone for the touchdown.
Saquon back.
That was his second rushing touchdown of the game. The Giants lead 31-24. Vikings have a chance to answer with 2 minutes to play, but Cousins outside to TJ Hawkinson. He stopped well short of the first down marker. Not able to get it done. The Giants hold on to win a huge one, 31-24. So Justin Jefferson torched the Giants in their regular season matchup, but was pretty quiet on Sunday. Head coach Kevin O'Connell was asked about it after the game. Listen to this.
Yeah, they didn't bring as much pressure tonight. It was more so a story of coverage, double teams. I think, you know, when you look at, you know, his stats, I don't think it's a coincidence. TJ, you know, having a big day. Adam Thielen with three big catches for 50 yards. KJ had some opportunities in addition to the 2 for 20. You know, ended up with about 56, 58 snaps. So you would have loved to have the ball a little bit more to be able to run it and marry the run and the pass.
Marcus, I mean, what went wrong?
It's just a direct correlation to what we've been watching all season long. One, this team has been living on a lifeline at the end of games in the fourth quarter, and most likely it's going to be Justin Jefferson making that play. And then, two, like I talked about Dalvin Cook previous to this game, not only in the run game, but using him on the outsides. The attempts were there, but they didn't have the success that they looked for. He mentioned Hawkinson, he mentioned Osborne, but Justin Jefferson has been the catalyst, and you can make an argument, could have been in the MVP running for this season based on his impact with the Minnesota Vikings.
I gotta say, I was looking forward to potentially seeing Justin Herbert in the playoffs. That's not gonna happen, as the Chargers were not able to get it done. Let's listen to Herbert first, talking about losing and not being able to continue
so
on.
So sad.
Obviously a tough go for us. You know, as an offense, we need to do more in the second half, and you know, that falls on us offensively, and as a quarterback, I need to perform better, and you got to be able to put up more than 3 points in the second half, and so I feel horrible for the defense for, you know, the incredible effort they put out there today, but got to be better as a team.
Jerry Herbo.
You know what happened to the Chargers offense?
Yeah, they couldn't stay on the field for a litany of reasons. Marcus complained about them not running the ball, but they also couldn't run the ball, averaging less than 3 yards per carry with their backs. Some of that is, again, due to the injuries on the offensive line with a problem all season. You don't have Mike Williams because he played in Week 18. Lose DeAndre Carter. Suddenly, touches are going to Michael Bandy. So some of it is not their fault necessarily, but also this is an offense that was entirely too conservative all season long. Justin Herbert should be nowhere near the bottom of the NFL in average depth of target, so that's something to consider as they move forward, both from a play calling and a personnel perspective.
Adam said he expects some changes on that staff. We'll keep an eye on it. Now to San Francisco, where Brock Purdy had quite the playoff debut, throwing for over 300 yards and three touchdowns while also scoring on a rushing touchdown. Purdy became the third player in NFL history to have at least 300 passing yards and four total touchdowns in a playoff debut. He joins Matthew Stafford and Kurt Warner in that category. Dan, what'd you like about Purdy on Saturday?
Thing that Kyle Shanahan asks out of his quarterback, make the right choice. What's our play call? Where's the opportunity? Where's the problem? Defense, where is the problem that they present to you, and where's the opportunity? Brock Purdy's processing and making that right choice every single snap is what has allowed him to play at a consistent basis for Kyle Shanahan. The decision-making, this is exactly what it looks like. Brock Purdy's going to drop back to passing. He's going to have multiple options of where to throw the football. Post, rail route, and a check down to the back. Well, it's not there. They get the post is underneath. The rail, they play over the top. Now, McCaffrey's really number three, but they inside out him. Great, get to number four, which is the whip return. But that's covered as well. Brock Purdy, the fifth option, the right choice, is to use your legs. This is fantastic by him, understanding that. Guys, he makes five decisions there in less than 2.5 seconds. Now, this is a drop back, essentially three-level throw. The eyes by Brock Purdy, if you imagine a die right there, 2 points and then the middle. his beautiful decision making. I want you guys to see it from the back angle. He's gonna drop back, stare to your left, bottom of the screen, to our left, excuse me, his right. If those backers drop, he's kicking the ball to Kittle. If they fly up, great. Last second, his eyes come, and he rips that crosser to Brandon Ayuk. That's exactly what Kyle Shanahan wants out of him. Just be this kid that's in high school taking a Scantron. What's the right choice? What's the right choice? What's the right choice? And make it on a consistent basis. That's why I think this is the best team in football right now and the team to beat when it comes to the Super Bowl. But we can't end a Monday without having the big fella, big sexy himself, the swagoo end us with the right way, and that is big
y'all
man.
Know what's coming. Y'all what know it? What's coming. What the big it? Sexy is about to get called out.
Tell
the
me what BMBs, it is.
The BMBs for life. And we had some dudes making plays. And here in Tampa, they should be really familiar with BMBs, man.
Wow.
My man, the Sap Daddy, who used to sack everybody, knock people on the ground. He was nasty. He was mean when you can actually play defensive line in the NFL and sleep people wide. Look at the big fella. No, don't be bringing this up, though. Slow down.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
We got BMB coming up. I always got to highlight the big sexies, and they made plays this game. And to your point with Brock Purdy on them Scantrons, all you got to do is mark C. You'll get most of them.
Hey, hit us with the shimmy. Ooh, get him. Hey, we got more coming your way from NFL Live. The Cowboys are arriving right now.
Uh-oh.
There's Zeke making his way in. He's got the cardigan on. He's got the stripes going. Horizontal stripes look good on him. That's
man,
not a good,
good
look
man,
for everybody.
They,
they work for him.
Man, jeans tighter than Marcus's pants right now.
Ooh,
his pants
so tight.
Are a little bit tight.
One
we got
move,
more
I'm
coming your
naked.
Way as Dak Prescott is making his way into the building in just moments. Big man balling. We're also making game picks in just a little bit. The Cowboys.
You see the colors?
Who
that's
are these
sharp.
You see the colors?
We'll be right back from Tampa Bay. Keep it right here. NFL Live is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
It's big man bowling time, and y'all know how we turn up on this segment. Finna give you all I got, Kevin Nash. Let me introduce y'all to the big fellas that made plays on Sunday. Let's go! Look at him! Somebody better block him. How are you doing this, Andy? Where did he come from? Morgan Spears Jr. with the rip club. Go get the quarterback. Me and people. I would be doing y'all a disservice if I didn't bring the best segment on TV.
Let's
to
go.
The people.
Let's go.
Share the energy with me. Get up and let's go. First and foremost, it's the playoffs, so I gotta bring my playoff intensity. Let's go straight to San Francisco and Seattle, because these boys knew that they needed to make a play on defense to swing the game, and that's exactly what they did. Let's get the sack fumble, and not only that, let another BMB recover the fumble. Bosa, the right Bosa, the Bosa that didn't get mad and throw his helmet down and cost the team a possession. That's the San Francisco 49ers way. Hey, coach, this is what the D'Amico Ryan said, coach, we need a turnover. Okay, coach, I'll oblige. Let's go make a play. That's what the 49ers do. And then we celebrate. I know y'all saw this last night. This was the most beautiful thing. Anytime we get athletic feats on television, I'm going to highlight it. Look at the little dudes. They back there running slow. They can't catch the big fella. My man Hubbard, he's going left. He's going right. Next time, we got to get to the sideline. We're more protected over there. But that's okay, because he's still scoring. Cincinnati, by the way, Dan.
Yeah.
Won by one touchdown.
That one touchdown. Yes, 7 points.
Who was responsible for that?
The defense.
BMB. BMB. Let's go. And last but not least, look at Kayvon Thibodeau. You want to know why the New York Giants are where they are right now beyond Daniel Jones? It's because they got some young hunters up front on that defensive line. My man Kayvon Thibodeau is getting outside on the screen, tackling the tight end who they tried to run the screen with. Call another play. We better than that. And last but not least, my man Daboll and Wing Martindale, they got bellies because they drink a lot of beer. They were hugging. That is also classified as BMB. This has been your edition of BMB live and direct. You're welcome.
Yeah!
Hey, let's see the Daboll dance.
Can we
do it?
Can we replicate the Daboll and Wing Martindale hug?
Dan, which one are you? Dan's
you don't
weight,
have
I
enough
think.
Belly.
He needs like a whole big belly attached to the front. To even try that. All right, Tom Brady has arrived at the stadium. As you can see, going through security. You know what? Superstars are people too. They got to still send their bags through security. He heads out onto the field. And we will be taking live shots of him on the field in just moments. So you see him getting ready to go
yet?
For a huge
He's there.
Run.
He's still there.
Is he gone?
He's
yet?
Lurking.
Now Marcus is scared of him. All right.
He looks
so
like
Mina,
Schwarzenegger
we always
right
hear
now.
The key to beating Brady is pressure. So what does Brady need to do to counter that on his side tonight?
Yeah, he just
well,
like
stop me if you
head,
stop me if you've heard this before. We'd like to see the Bucks use play action on early downs to try to stop that pass rush.
Get him off the TV.
Look, the Bucks are so much better when they go tempo. Now they obviously can't do that over the course of the entire game, but a little bit more than we've seen. And then finally, there's this. Tom Brady is the quickest release in football.
Yeah.
If he can just add not even like a half, like a quarter of a second today and stand in a little bit longer, and maybe he's gonna have to take a couple of hits, those deep pass opportunities will be there downfield. But he's gonna have to wait a little bit longer than he has so far this season.
I think the key for Tampa tonight is this, offensively. You have to break tendency. You have a year-long tendency of running the football on early downs and thinking, here, we'll get the second and eight. Defenses know that. Byron Leftwich and Tom Brady, are you guys going to, in the playoffs, flip the switch? Because here's what happens. When you consistently tell people who you are, they start to bank on knowing it. And early downs, here comes run pressures. They pinch everybody inside. They get the edge. Second and 11 now. You can't live in second and 11. You're going to run the football again. They know it. They are stacking the line of scrimmage going, all right, you guys are going to run the football. We don't have any fear of play action or you throwing the ball on those early downs. We're going to play completely downhill. Then you're in second and 11 and second and 12 and back-to-back downs. Guys, this is what I want. Byron Leftwich, to start this football game, be unpredictable. Give me those early down play actions where you could protect Tom Brady, and then you have such separation for guys like Chris Godwin. If you want to start every concept with Mike Evans to Chris, that's fine. But if Tampa doesn't do this, straight up, crowd, if Tampa Bay does not break tendencies and throw the ball in early downs, you guys will be home tomorrow morning losers. Oh. If you do, you got a chance to win.
Goodness. Marcus.
Why are you telling them what to do?
Well, they're
my
not
job.
Playing, so it's fine. Go ahead.
That's what we get paid to do.
You mentioned it earlier in the show. I'm looking at the matchup away from Trayvon Diggs. I want to know if, Mina, to your point, are they going to be able to make Brady hold this ball for a half a second? And then, two, when you do get those man-to-man matchups on the outside, will those DBs hold up? Will it be Mullen? Will it be Rhodes? Will it be a safety over the top? I know that when I watch Mike Evans against the Carolina Panthers, every one of those touchdowns was man-to-man coverage with no help over the top.
Yep.
So let's take that away and see if we can hold up on other ends of the field. And then, two, you got to make sure that you take some of those early access throws away that Tom loves
you gotta,
to do.
You can't give them so much space.
Just make him hitch.
Totally.
Just make him hitch for a second and allow your rush to get there. I'd be very interested to see how they play away from Trayvon Diggs tonight.
Tom Brady surveying the field. There's been lots of conversation about what tonight could mean for him. Could it be the end for the GOAT? We don't know for sure. Lisa Salter's reporting earlier that they're not talking about that, and that hasn't been the conversation. Brady going to assess things in the offseason, but he sure hopes the offseason does not start anytime soon. Let's make some game picks, everybody. Okay, who do we have in Cowboys Bucks? Mina Kimes, you get to kick us off. Who are you taking?
Okay, I actually changed my mind here because the more we talked about it, the more that I remembered Dallas is the better football team. They've been the better football team all season. They should win this game, so I'm picking them to win.
I got the Cowboys. Okay, we got one for the Cowboys. Swagoo.
Do y'all have to ask? Do you even have to ask?
I don't know why.
Since you're
give us some analysis of this game.
I'll tell you, I'm taking the Dallas Cowboys. And you know why? Because I think that Kellen Moore, and I told you this, we talked about this the week of the Washington Commanders game. I said that was very vanilla in the way that they ran offensive plays. I think they were getting ready for this week.
Yeah.
And I think in order to take care of Tampa, you got to attack their speed and aggressiveness on defense. I think the Cowboys do that offensively because that's the only way they win this game. I got the Dallas Cowboys! Let's go!
Dan!
I agree with Mina. Dallas is the better team. I think they're able to run the ball just a little bit. It's not going to be a big night running the football, but just a little bit. and Dak Prescott starts to create a new playoff narrative about who he is, I'm taking the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, boy. All right. So we got three for the Cowboys. You know what you said, though, when Tom Brady entered the building? You said it just looks like he's going to win.
Oh, no.
You said it just looks like he was locked in. I just watched him on the field. I don't know how you guys could go against Tom Brady tonight.
I'm picking my God.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Don't you worry, my friend.